Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast number 211, Biodex Protocols. We're talking with Kevin Maloney, who's a staff physical therapist at Memorial Hermann Medical Center, or Memorial Hermann Ironman in the Medical Center. He has been an athletic trainer for 6 years, and he's got a couple of specialties here. We're talking about Biodex Protocols. And then we also have Nicole Casha joining us. I am Jeremy Jackson, your host. Let me switch over to my camera so you can see my beautiful face. If you want to join our conversation, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. This one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/biodex. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/biodex is where you'll be able to find this later. Hopefully answers to the questions and links to anything that Kevin gives me. So without much further ado, we're going to get right to talking about the questions. Kevin, why don't you tell us your athletic trainer story?
Of course. So I first was exposed to athletic training in my high school setting. And from there, I kind of knew that if I was going to do athletic training, I wanted to also do physical therapy, as I felt like I could best provide a comprehensive care for my athletes. So I went to Western Illinois University for athletic training. And at the end of that undergrad experience, I did an internship at ESPN's Wide World of Sports, which is a 100% event coverage of all sporting events that they have at the Disney venue site for all athletics. So wide variety of sports, wide age population, as well as talent level. So from there, I went to University of Florida for my doctorate in physical therapy and graduated in 2014. And then followed that up with a sports medicine residency at Ironman Sports Medicine Institute here at the Medical Center. And from there, I've stayed on staff and started a fellowship in manual therapy. Currently, I treat in the clinic, and then I also treat out at the University of Houston Athletic Training Room and cover athletic events as needed in the area.
Got it. So you're staff athletic trainer
at staff physical therapist at the medical center. Yeah.
Yeah, because you were just saying do it athletic training as needed.
Mm-hmm, as
just
needed.
Threw me off for a second. Mm-hmm. So okay. Actually, I know it's a little off topic, but talk to me just a little bit about the Disney Wide World of Sports.
Of course. I love talking about it. So it's an incredible experience that they have set up. So you're affiliated through a hospital system, at least at the time it was. They still have an internship program there, but you are contracted to cover all of the club events and all the events that come on. So their goal is to have a sporting event every day of the year, and they're close to attaining that. So you work underneath the head athletic trainers and provide coverage of everything that comes in the door. So one day you'd be covering a wrestling, like AAU, the Amateur Athletic Union, like championships that are held there. And then the next day you'd be covering like USSSA softball. The next day the women's professional softball team is in town and you're covering their game. So you get to cover, you're on the field pretty much all day, and it's an incredible experience. They have a ton of supplies, a ton of equipment, and just the hands-on ability to be covering 4 basketball courts day in and day out as you're exposed to so many athletes. So you're going to get a lot of injuries to see. So as far as after you get like an undergrad and are at the end of your athletic training curriculum, you get the opportunity to apply for it. And it was probably the best thing I could have done for feeling comfortable with on-the-sport injuries, like on-the-field injuries. So I can't say enough good things about the program that they had there.
Very cool. We have actually submitted a field trip to take our kids next spring break to Disney. And one of the spots is we're going to go see ESPN Worldwide of Sports, yeah, talk with athletic trainers at Disney and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So Jill and Adam there are fantastic. They were great mentors and leaders, and they helped me prepare for boards as well as provide an incredible experience on the field. So I think it's worth a trip, and definitely they have some incredible facilities there. It's Disney. It's well taken care of. So
right, yeah. Disney, just everything is just a step up there
at
Disney.
They treat you like a staff member. They expect you to kind of follow all the Disney rules, and there's protocols on your uniform, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great place to be.
Very cool. So maybe I'll have to catch up or get some more information from you on that later.
Yeah.
So all right. So now we're talking about Biodex protocols. Why am I bringing you in to talk about Biodex protocols?
Yeah, of course. So I mean, my first exposure to Biodex testing was in undergrad when we had a Biodex machine for athletic training, and we would test athletes on it as well as learn the basic protocols. And so with that, I was able to get a small sampling of it and not understand the full big picture, but I was at least able to understand the protocol and understand its use and potential implications, but kind of still missing the big picture. Then when I was in physical therapy school at University of Florida, I had a clinical at the University of Cincinnati in the athletics department. And through there, I was able to see the emphasis that they put on Biodex testing, particularly in postoperative knee patients, to determine readiness for return to play. So as far as like putting into a big puzzle, Biodex was a big part of their ability to say if an athlete was able to return to on the field competition. And so with that, I became very proficient in setting up the Biodex, interpreting the data, looking at the results, and identifying where we're lagging at. From there, my time as a sports medicine resident with Ironman, we have an entire research study that's devoted to postoperative knee patients. And with that, we are doing Biodex testing on each and every one of them to determine trying to get some normative data. And I think right now in the literature, it's what's missing is some normative peak torque data to really identify if an athlete is behind or if an athlete is right on target with where they're expected to be. So every Tuesday, Dr. Walter Lowe from UT Health at the Medical Center Memorial Hermann location, he has all of his postoperative knee patients come into the clinic and get tested to see where they're at functionally. So depending on what time they are for follow-up, they come in and we test them, their strength. And so you just run through the protocol. So you are doing 20 a day, sometimes 20 every Tuesday, just to make sure that you're setting up properly and making sure you're able to interpret the data, not only relay that to the doctors, but also relay that to the patient and let them know kind of where they are. So I guess, and from there, I was asked by Dr. Yellen to teach the University of Houston, a master's athletic training program, about the Biodex protocols and all of its use, because they do have a machine there as well, and maybe some other features of the machine that they hadn't quite tapped into just yet.
Okay, so you talked about a research that you're involved in. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's called the COFAX study. It's the clinical outcomes following arthroscopic knee surgery. It's based off of all the postoperative patients that Dr. Walter Lowe sees. And so when they come in for a regular follow-up on a Tuesday, he sends them down to us and we put them through a gamut of tests. We test their range of motion. We test their heel height difference. We have them perform a single leg squat on the Y balance. And then based on where they are, we have them head over to the Biodex. If it's a patient that is newly post-operative, we have them do an isometric test. So they do not do a full three-speed isokinetic test. They just push into an immovable force to get a measure of the maximal volitional contraction. And so that's a good way for us to kind of respect the healing timeframes of the patient's procedure and how they're doing, but get at least an idea of where their strength is at their time of recovery. And so based on that data and based on where they are, then we would maybe take them through some functional testing afterwards, such as single leg hopping for distance, figure eight tests, just to see where they are functionally. And so it gives us, and I think my big thing about Biodex testing is it's a piece of the puzzle. The research study itself, it allows us to kind of get a bigger picture and capture more of the patient than just doing one of the tests alone. Because what we're seeing in the research is that the Biodex, it does a good job in identifying, yes, it's a reliable method in determining peak torque, but sometimes it doesn't always correlate to function. Back in 1997, Kevin Wilk did an article saying knee extensor peak torque, so how strong your quads were, was related really well to subjective functioning of the knee, so how the patients felt their knee was, but then also to hop testing. So since then, the research has been a little off of that mark, but what we're seeing is that it has been shown to be correlated to function, but not always. So it is a good piece of the puzzle to help your athletes kind of understand where they're at, and that's really what we're trying to use it as with this study at the Memorial Hermann Center.
Go ahead.
How's the inter-rater and intra-rater reliability?
Yeah, so it has a fantastic inter-rater reliability. It's each study that I've seen is over 0.9. I think there was one study that determined that it was maybe not best utilized for asymptomatic patients, but don't quote me on that. I have to look at the article again. But there is, I think, one study out there that's saying there might be a little bit of inter-rater reliability fault with testing asymptomatic patients between that. But I'd have to look at that article again. But as far as other studies gone, it's shown to be pretty reliable measure. And that's shown most effectively back in 2007, article done by Soule. He did a really good job of kind of standardizing the test and making sure that they had reliable data. And that's what they found, is that the Biodex testing was reliable as a measurement for these patients.
Yeah, I remember in college, the Biodex was like, okay, well, if you didn't pass your Biodex test, then you couldn't go back to play.
Yeah.
Whereas now we have a much more, I guess, holistic approach. You know, if you can't do this squat, if you can't jump, if you can't do all this other stuff, then you can't progress. Mm-hmm. You know, especially with Memorial Hermann, I guess you guys are, I know Ryan Collins is involved with the that study where they're doing the stepped approach to the ACL recovery. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but rather than a timetable, it's whether or not a functional, whether or not you can do this.
Yeah.
And so
We're kind of seeing that we can't just say, oh yeah, ACL patients return at 6 months. And if we do, it's almost sometimes an injustice because not everybody's going to meet that 6 months.
Right.
But what we're finding is when we do these tests, it's grounds for saying, hey, athlete, you're not safe to return to play. And as you said, like back in the day, the Biodex testing was kind of the end all be all. If you passed, you were golden. But that kind of misses a lot of the athlete. Like, that's great. They were able to recruit their quads really well, but can they squat? Like, how do they look jumping? Like, if they have a lot of valgus and they're really stressing that knee, are they really ready to return to play, even though they demonstrate a lot of strength? So functionally, we're kind of taking a look at the big picture right now, and thankfully that's kind of where therapy overall in the nation's going, is trying to understand, hey, let's look at more than just one piece here.
All right, so we've been talking about Biodex, using it for the knee. What are the other uses that you
absolutely
have for the Biodex?
Yeah, so specifically our clinic, it's mostly reserved for knees just because that's the high patient volume that we see. It's also the most widely researched, is ACLR and meniscal repairs, how well patients are doing after that. So bulk of the research is there, but other uses for it are shoulder. We use it for quite a bit for rotator cuffs, testing external rotation versus internal rotation strength, and trying to find that external rotation strength should be around 67 to 77% strength compared to the internal rotators. And so what we're finding in the research with that is their patients are doing well at recovering that kind of ratio. But what you really have to watch out for with that is other surgical considerations and when you're utilizing it for the shoulder. Shoulders can get a little angry sometimes with the testing. So it's one thing you have to be very careful of, and making sure that you're understanding the full surgical procedures and respect the healing timeframes to ensure that you're using it. So testing external and internal range of motion by the side, and we can also adjust the machine to take it up a little bit higher, which might be more functional, say for a tennis player, for an overhead athlete. So there are ways to modify the equipment to test it in different ranges. As far as other uses and research, foot and ankle, particularly for plantar flexion, peak torque, they've looked at that as well. As I said, it's not heavily researched, but it's one of those things where you're able to at least understand, hey, is there a muscle weakness here? Unfortunately, what that doesn't tell you is there's other factors that go in. Is it just muscle atrophy? Is that why the athlete's weak? Is it maybe motivation? Maybe the athlete's just not trying hard or isn't really in it that day? Or is there pain? Are they having pain with the test, and that gives you an off reading? And also, it really doesn't tell you if there's any like reflexive inhibition. So maybe there is some sort of neuromuscular weakness going on that test can't capture. And so that's important to know, because you're going to treat each of those things differently. If a patient presents with atrophy, say of the calf, go ahead and strengthen it. That's great. If the patient has poor motivation or pain, those are other things you have to address. Like motivation, you have to encourage them. And pain, you have to address the settings and change the settings to test them more appropriately. And then if it's like a reflexive inhibition thing, like they just can't recruit the muscle very well, not because of atrophy, then from there, you have to utilize other modalities such as a biofeedback or NMES to help the athlete regain that neuromuscular recruitment of the motor units. So kind of understanding that as we use it for other body parts, as long as you're really understanding the fundamentals of the test, it is useful to kind of identify where your athlete is at and maybe what's an issue preventing them from getting as strong as they can be. So research done for the shoulder in particular, has been, as once again for the knee, is moving more towards piece of the puzzle. And so it, for me, looking back at the research, it never was like the knee was, what we had mentioned. It never was, if you can't pass your Biodex, you can't return to sport. I haven't quite seen that in the literature for the shoulder. What I have seen is, especially now, is it falling into a bigger functional testing. So the closed kinetic chain upper extremity tap test, that's a big one that we can utilize to see function as well. We'll stick them on the Biodex and look for that 67 to 77% ratio of external rotation strength. So we're able to, and a long sitting shot put test, we're trying to put all those pieces together. It's just not as widely researched at this time for the upper extremity as it is for the lower extremity, particularly the knee. So it's out there. It's just, you got to really hunt for it. And some of the studies might not be as large in number to kind of really get a better idea to generalize your results to more patients.
All right. You said long sitting shot put test.
Yeah. So you have the athlete sit in a chair, and they're like long sitting. So their feet are up. They take a shot put by their, or a big weight by their face, and then they throw it as far as they can. And so you're looking for symmetry side to side to assess for power. It's been correlated pretty well to like one repetition bench press scores, which also not very functional to one repetition max bench press. But for overhead athletes, it's kind of nice to see, all right, let's put you in a power position and see what you're able to throw. And there's other tests that they utilize, such as like a long toss for a softball. So you just take a ball, throw it as far as you can and measure it. So there's a couple other tests out there for the upper extremity that the Biodex testing for will hopefully become more correlated with and researched further, but the evidence just isn't quite there for it yet.
Okay, cool. Kind of a silly question. When you first started setting up the Biodex, how long did it take you to get one patient set up?
That's a really good question. I feel like when I first learned it in undergrad, maybe my head wasn't in it, but I feel like I could have got a little bit more invested in faster at it. But I think my time at University of Cincinnati in the athletics department there, I became much more comfortable with it. And it's almost like, I feel like kind of like NASCAR when you're like flipping a tire. You're just like, mm-hmm. you're just kind of getting the go with it and do it. So and I feel like, Nicole, you were there when I taught the lecture at U of H. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you picked it up kind of fast?
Well, one thing that I liked that you did was you showed landmarks that made it easier for us mm-hmm. to be able to place the like the hinges on right and what we could use. Because if it's just put this here, put that there, but if we actually have like a reference to mm-hmm. go off, it just makes it quicker because we just look and put it together.
Yeah, and those references are available, absolutely, to kind of say, all right, this is where the landmarks are. And so once you know what you're looking for, I feel like it's a pretty easy test to get through setup-wise. Yeah, it does take some time to set it up, but once you get comfortable with it, you can kind of speed it up pretty fast.
Especially if you have a rusty Biodex like the one we had, untwisting some of those.
Yeah, they had a brand new one that really had never been used, it was like a little bit tighter. It hadn't been worked in yet.
So are those landmarks, you said they're available, is that something that comes up, does it say in the program?
In the protocols, yeah, the absolutely. Protocol. So not quite, I'm actually not familiar if they have it set up on the computer. I'll have to look into that. But the protocols that you are given and that you can find online, they do have the specific landmarks. For example, when you're doing the knee, just because it's the big heavy hitter, you're looking to set the hinge point at the lateral condyle, the lateral femoral condyle. So that's just kind of your benchmark to say, all right, this is where I need the knee to rotate around the axis. So from there, there's other points, such as when for the distal pad to stabilize above the ankle, you're just superior to the lateral malleolus. So there are, once you kind of, as Nicole said, figure out where it's supposed to go, it's pretty easy to kind of rep through it and get to what you need to do.
So how functional is the Biodex when you're in a short sitting position, mm-hmm. you're only getting knee extension?
Yeah.
And obviously like the quads do more than just knee extension.
Yeah.
So is it really truly testing the quads, or is it just testing a kick in short sitting?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of testing that kick in short sitting. And so that's kind of what the research has been trying to say is like, all right, how functional is that test? Kind of what you're asking. We know that when you're doing that long kick test, primarily you're recruiting the quads and specifically lat rectus femoris. So what one of our, my cohort colleague, his name is Jaime Aparicio, he looked for research, how well was the single leg wide balance squat test, the anterior reach, how correlated was it to the Biodex testing? So when we were doing the anterior reach for the wide balance, what we find is that it's more specific for recruiting the rectus femoris. And so when you're kind of in that position for the Biodex, you're gonna get a lot of rectus femoris activation as well. So what we're able to find is that there really at this time wasn't much correlation. So at least in our study sample. Mm-hmm. So we're not really finding that true correlation between the pure strength and the function. So that's, as you kind of said, one of the drawbacks, which is why it really should only be used as a piece of the puzzle and not the end all be all. I almost feel bad for the patients that we had previously before kind of knowing about the grand scheme of things and giving them this time frame and Biodex test to say, oh, you guys can't return to sport because you're doing poorly on this, but they look great functionally. Mm-hmm. So, and you'll see that if you ever come to like a Tuesday, you'd be able to see some athletes do extremely well on these functional tests and they look great and their Biodex might be a little bit off. And I look think back, well, if this was like 1996, maybe would this athlete be banned from playing because simply their quads weren't strong enough? And I don't know the answer to that question, but it's unfortunate to say that it's not where we'd like it to be yet. But as far as getting an idea where the athlete is, I think it's a great tool.
Have they tried changing the position in which the person sits on the Biodex, like laying down? That way you can elongate the rest of the quad.
Yeah, and we know that as far as like a length tension relationship, your hamstrings also will change based on your body's positioning. Mm-hmm. So I have not seen any research on that as far as changing the patient's positioning, because that's mostly been standardized to an upright position. Mm-hmm. But as we know, like when you're reclined, it changes what your hamstring's able to do. So I think that'd be something worth looking into. I haven't quite seen that come across the literature, but maybe have your master's thesis there.
So is Biodex part of a cluster of tests that they've put together, or is it still its own entity?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's definitely formed into a cluster, as I kind of said, at least at our facility. And I think we're seeing that more throughout research as well. When you're testing athletes specifically for research, you're typically not just going to look at one or two things. It's kind of best to grab a whole gamut of things. So for us specifically, I mentioned to them earlier, but having all of that available to you, it really helps you guide the athlete. And that's kind of what we're looking for. So if an athlete, let's say what we're finding a lot is when an athlete starts returning to running, they are excited and they start running a lot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that takes a hit on their strength training that they're putting into. So sometimes what we're seeing is that as an athlete returns to running, like, oh, great, they're getting functional, they're getting better. And then we put them on a Biodex after they've been running for a month, and their strength is actually a little bit less than what it was before. And what that's important to me is saying, hey, it's great that we're running, it's great that we're progressing, but we still have to hit the gym. Like, we still have to hit the weights. Like, mm-hmm. your strength isn't there yet. So it's a good check-in tool for the athlete to be like, oh man, you're right. I really haven't been hitting the weight much. I haven't really been squatting as much. I haven't been doing as much lunges and all those other strengthening activities that are so important to providing dynamic stability of the knee. So it's been a useful tool in that respect to say, hey, you got to get back to the weights. We're trying to look at the big picture here, and right now you're letting that ball drop a little bit.
I wonder if that could just be determined by asking them if they can still lift or if they can still squat how much they did before.
Yeah.
Instead of using the Biodex.
Yeah. So, and that could be another route to say, all right, like how, and one way to do that is you can test one rep maximum. Or if you wanted, you could do kind of like an omni-res scale, which is kind of having the athlete rate how hard they're working. Scale is 0 to 10. 10 is you're lifting as much weight as you could possibly imagine, and 0, you're lifting nothing. And so that's a way to gauge an athlete, like, all right, this is where you're at before. You're working at an 8 out of 10 doing 4 sets of 8. Where are you at right now when you're doing like a leg press activity? So it's another way for you to kind of gauge. You don't need to have the Biodex, but all right, athletes, how hard do you feel like you're working right now? So that could be another, I guess, way if you didn't have access to the Biodex that you could be, say, hey, where are you at feeling with this strength activity?
So back to the Biodex then, if you were to use it, do you have a criteria that they have to meet as far as range of motion for the shoulder? You need to at least have this much before you can even test on the Biodex.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as I said, with like the post-op, especially when they're early post-operatively, it's not indicated to do a full range of motion isokinetic test because you could potentially damage the graft and also the graft site. So say if it's a patellar tendon, they're not going to love doing open kinetic chain knee extension. That's going to hurt. So you do have to take that into consideration. One case, an example, when I was, I guess, young and dumb and learning more about the Biodex, I had a patient, a shoulder patient, who had some posterior impingement of his shoulder. And so me and his doctor decided, yeah, we want to test him on the Biodex. And then as we were testing him, we set his range of motion maximums and we did his full range. And then every time he'd go into full external rotation, he'd get his pinching in the back. So the test was pretty much useless. And we put a patient through pain each time. His pain went away, but we put a patient through pain each time, not really respecting that he wasn't ready for a test like that. So an isometric test would be more useful, or matching the range of motion to within a pain-free range. And that's something that you, as you continue to grow and learning how to use the Biodex, that comes second nature. So
yeah, so you can actually get pretty specific on the computer.
Mm-hmm. As far as how you want the range of motion to go. There's a feature where you can auto set the range of motion. So it makes it at least a little bit more ideal to get symmetrical range of motion side to side and stay out of a potentially pain-free range.
Hey, Kevin, it's Josh Schellen. How are you?
Hey, Josh. Great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm just jumping in here. And so have you guys talked about using Biodex for pre-participation examination?
Oh, no, we have not talked about that.
Let's go down that route.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess, can I? Yeah, go ahead.
So let's say that, obviously I don't have, football, maybe it's more basketball where there's more functional movements, et cetera. I want to get some baseline data along with, say, functional movement screen, some other balance type tests. Tell me some of the research and the literature that supports doing Biodex to get some of that baseline data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what they found in the research is that if there is a poor ratio of hamstring to quad strength, so say you're extremely deficient in your hamstrings pre-injury, that you are more susceptible to injury. It hasn't been validated vastly in the literature, but has been validated once to say if you have a poor ratio, then you potentially have more risk for injury. So in that standpoint, it could potentially be used as a pre-participation examination. But when I think about the volume of athletes maybe you're trying to see, if it's a small volume and it's not a bad idea to go ahead and you have access to a machine and time on your hands, it wouldn't be a bad idea to kind of grab where they're at, not only for just making injury perspective, but also from like a strength and conditioning standpoint. So some hard objective data to show to your strength and conditioning team saying, hey, this is where they're at. This is where we'd like to see them be based on like peak torque per body weight. That's something you can look at as well, just to kind of establish, hey, this training program is working, or hey, they really haven't gained strength or power at all, and they're potentially still at risk for injury. So yeah, from a pre-participation examination standpoint, I think it'd be a fine tool if you had the access to it and the means to utilize it.
And so along that theme, if I were to use Biodex for pre-participation examination, is there any literature that supports the difference between, you know, obviously you brought up hamstring quad ratio and, you know, we're bipedal mammals resisting gravity, so quads are always going to be a little bit stronger than hamstrings.
Of course.
And so is there any literature that would support, you know, really focusing more on the female patient versus the male patient because of the Q angle, et cetera?
I haven't seen that come up in the literature, at least correlated to Biodex, as far as the potential for genetic predisposition or gender predisposition, excuse me. Let me think about that. I think what they're finding more often is, as far as risk, and I'm sorry to go back to the knee, but it's just so popularly researched, when you're looking at female athlete risk for ACL, they're looking at neuromotor control and neuromuscular factors. So that's not always what the Biodex data can tell you. So based off of that, I'd say maybe it wouldn't be as important to look at the Biodex test for female athletes as it would be to look at them functionally, such as a LESS test, a Y balance, and seeing how those come out as opposed to the Biodex. I think if I was to choose one over the other, I'd choose like a single leg step down test over the Biodex. I would choose the LESS jump test over the Biodex, just based on, I think I'd care more about the function for a female athlete.
And how do you like the Y balance?
Well, it's been researched a lot over a large group of athletes. Almost every sport now has some sort of, I guess, average value based off of leg length that I've at least seen collected from research done at Ben Hogan. One of their past residents put together a really nice table of all what the Y balance can offer. I think it's a pretty easy test to run. Seems to be pretty reliable from what we've done with our work at Ironman. We've used it in endurance athletes as well as post-operative knee athletes, and I think I'm more favorable in as far as the data saying, hey, if your anterior reach Y balance is greater than 4 centimeters different side to side, then we have a problem here. And that's been proven to be pretty valid as far as looking and returning an athlete to play. So for me, I do like the Y balance as far as a test to see where they're at functionally.
And how do you like the Y balance compared to the star exertion?
I think as far as what the research has shown, the Y balance is a little bit more expedient. And so as far as time saving goes, I would more likely do a Y balance because it's, once you have the device, it's easy to set up. You just have 3 directions to reach for. And it's pretty simplistic for the athlete. I would prefer the Y balance over the star excursion, just personally based on time and efficiency.
Okay. Nicole, I'll hand it back to you.
All right. Can we go back to the shoulder?
Of course.
Because I'm really like dealing with baseball.
Yeah, of course.
So how much research is there using the Biodex on the shoulder? And you were talking about 67%, I think you brought up difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
External rotation, internal rotation. Can you go in a little bit into about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as the research into baseball, I've seen it done work with Todd Ellenbecker. He does a lot of tennis athletes, so I can speak a little bit more to that because that's what I've been looking into a little bit and saying, yeah, they've tested it and they've looked at it. And as far as I wish I could say it was the end all be all, but it doesn't quite seem like the Biodex testing is exactly what we're looking for as far as that one piece of information that's going to help you decide what this athlete can do. As I said, you can get a great idea as far as strength going if they're a regularly healthy athlete and say, all right, we need to get your rotator cuff stronger. But as far as returning a post-operative athlete to it, I haven't quite seen the literature stand out for the shoulder as much as I have for other areas. As far as baseball goes, that's a tough one. I haven't, unfortunately, seen enough research on that I'd be pleased with to report to say, yeah, this, I feel good about the Biodex testing. I'm going to use all my baseball guys to see where they're at. I just haven't had the research back that up enough to rationalize it that way.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think that a Biodex or a machine or a system can give you data on the shoulder, which is, it produces the fastest motion acceleration in the body. Like, you know, the fastest pitch was what, like 115 or?
No. And when you're thinking like biomechanically, like as you mentioned, like the sheer stress that's going through the joint when you're pitching, it's nowhere near matched on the shoulder, like on the Biodex. So like obviously pitching is going to be more demanding of the joint than actually is throwing. So it's not able to capture that functionally as well as we'd like it to. The research is out there, but it's not capturing the whole picture. And that's something to really keep in mind when you're using something like this.
Right, because it's single planar. It's just one plane. It's either sagittal or...
Pretty static, yeah. There's things you can do, such as looking into like a reactive eccentric control, which is a good program that the Biodex has to look at how they're able to... It's kind of, you can do neuromotor control recruitment of the eccentrics, which is nice, but still not actually throwing a baseball. So it's one of those things to look into, and you can test their eccentrics, but it's not the same motion. There's so much that comes into it, especially what we're finding literature-wise of what else can affect the shoulder, like lacking ankle dorsiflexion for a baseball pitcher isn't a good thing. Lacking core control isn't a good thing. So to kind of put it all on the Biodex would not be doing the rest of the throwing motion justice.
Yeah, I would almost say that the Biodex does really good in determining strength, but how good is strength to an athlete if they can't even control it functionally?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's good for the shoulder.
All right. So as we're talking about the Biodex, Josh mentioned something I hadn't even thought of, using it as a PPE. So what are your favorite uses for the Biodex?
Yeah, of course. So only because it's so much in the literature, post-operative patients, it is a great way to indicate where they're at and their progress for strength particularly. That's primarily what we're seeing it used for. Like, day in and day out, that is being used for that particularly, at least at our center. There's other centers that do focus more research on shoulder, therefore they'll be doing more shoulders, but post-operative patients is really what it's come in for. Based on patient irritability and based on like the doctor's considerations, that's when you really get to identify, is this an appropriate time to utilize it? So as far as my favorite time to use it is as soon as I am kind of have make sure that the athlete has no signs and symptoms of like patellofemoral pain or anterior interval pain, so like the pain in front of the right below the kneecap, I'm looking to see if they clear out of there, then I'm going to stick them on the Biodex and kind of see where we're at. And the athletes typically respond well to it. They kind of like to see that. They like to meet their score. They like to have that obtainable measurement to say, oh, I'm getting stronger, or okay, I'm not getting stronger. So as far as me checking in with the patient and giving them something to strive for, it's a great tool to say, hey, let's work towards this goal together. Let's get your quads at 90% as strong as your other side this far out of surgery, however long that is.
And so when is the first time? I mean, are you hitting Biodex? I mean, obviously it's the strength of the graft, et cetera, but timelines, you're at what, 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 18 weeks?
Yeah, so depending on how flared up the knee is, I've seen people as early as 4 weeks get on the Biodex test for isometric testing, knee extension and flexion at 75 degrees of knee flexion. That's what we utilize, the protocol that we utilize at the Ironman facility, and we haven't had any patients become flared up or had any issues with it. Obviously, we tell them that don't push through pain. If you have pain, acknowledge that it's there, don't push past it. But the athletes have seen, as I've said, they've gone back to, if they're not working with us, they've gone back to their PTs and said, hey, they put me on this Biodex test and I'm not where I want to be. And so from that standpoint, it kind of fires a match for the athlete saying, all right, let's get us strong. We're not there where we want to be yet.
And so how, talk a little bit about the psychological part of, biofeedback from the Biodex. I think that a lot of people look at it from a physiological standpoint, but the psychological standpoint of I'm getting some biofeedback, I'm able to get some objective numbers. Mm-hmm. Talk about how you incorporate that into your rehab protocols.
Yeah, of course. And as I mentioned this earlier, is a big thing for the athletes to say where they're, to see where they're at. And so psychologically, when an athlete is having a hard time recruiting quads and you've been hitting it for so long, and then they get on the Biodex and you see a great improvement, that's a big win for the athlete. They're able to see actual objective change. We know that when you're looking at function overall, the athlete wants to get to those milestones of running and jumping, but getting them to explain, hey, we can't run and jump until you have quad that's working. They do pretty well psychologically saying, hey, my quad's working, can we start doing this? And then I'm saying, yeah, we have this piece of equipment behind us that's allowing us to move forward with that.
How many of the patients that you see actually have a baseline before?
Yeah, so very little to none to have a baseline before surgery, unless they were a re-tear or unless it was their other knee potentially. Okay. And so for me, baseline, it's a hot topic actually, because we always say, yeah, we have a gold standard. It's your other leg. Like your other leg's the good leg. We're going to go based off of that. But what we're finding, and there was a great article put out by Kevin Wilkes saying, hey, we got to do more than just compare them to the other side. We have to aim higher than that. This person got injured for a reason. We have to aim higher than what their function was before and what their strength was before when putting them back on the field. Like for most injuries, the number one risk of getting an injury was a re-injury. So spraining your ankle, the number one risk for having another ankle sprain is having that ankle sprained in the first place. So same thing goes for the knee. If you had a re-tear, it's likely, or if you had a tear, you're at more risk for having a re-tear. And that's something I wouldn't tell my athletes straight out, because psychologically that wouldn't do well. But saying, hey, yeah, you're looking great compared to the other side, we still want more. I'm still going to ask and expect more out of them. And typically they get on the same page with that, because, I mean, the athletes like to be pushed hard, and that's primarily who we're putting through this test.
So what's the research? What does it say based on having a baseline versus if you use your quote-unquote good leg?
I don't think there has been enough normative baseline data to be able to have that, to be able to say, all right, are we getting them back to that? I haven't seen enough about having a baseline, just because so few people actually do it. That's something that we could look at with our literature for those people that do re-tear, saying, all right, this is where they were at. But fortunately, those are already people who have re-torn. I don't think they've really taken, there are some healthy control studies out there, but I don't think there's been long-term follow-up with them to say, okay, did you tear your ACL? And if so, where were you at? Or doing a shoulder, did you hurt your shoulder? Where was your baseline external rotation versus internal rotation torque at? So
yeah, I'd like to see that. So you could even use three different comparisons. One would be that person's baseline. Another one would be what a normal healthy person maybe in their age range and or sport. And then another one would be their good leg.
Absolutely.
And then how those compare.
I would love to see if somebody wants to take the time to do it, is grab all those normative data and kind of plot it out and say, this is where we'd expect that age group, almost like what we do with children with height and weight, and kind of set them on that curve and say, this is where we'd expect normal people. And as Dr. Yellen had mentioned, maybe using that for pre-participation examinations. Nobody has put together that pretty little graph yet that I think would potentially be useful in identifying where normative data would be. There's so many variables that go with that, though, that it'd really be hard to kind of weed out. But it could be something that, given the time, I feel like somebody could investigate that.
Yeah, I think it would improve its validity of the Biodex, at least.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah,
the Biodex has been around for a long time. I remember going over the Biodex where we used to read it based on, you know, it looked like an EKG. It wasn't a pretty little printout the way that we have it now. You looked at it like the EKG. So Nicole, I know that one of Nicole's goals is to go on for a PhD, and I think this is a nice dissertation project for her, so just keep that in mind. Everybody's listening, take her on as a PhD student. This would be great.
I'm interested in motion capture cameras and Qualysys systems and softwares.
Yeah, I think if you were going to go, there is plenty of research, especially Dr. Yellen, you've mentioned how long that's been going on for. There's so much vast research out there on the Biodex, but I think the quality of research is continuing to improve as we go forward. So how much of that old data is still useful, I can't really speak to. I haven't read every article, but there's so much out there that could potentially be useful.
Yeah. Go back and talk about how, we're talking about linear movement in terms of Biodex, right? We're talking about strength and endurance. And then there's this other component of functional movement. So how in your rehab protocols, you know, we've kind of danced around this a little bit, but now I want you to be able to triangulate all this data. And how do you start to work the results of the Biodex into helping you prescribe functional exercises?
Yeah, absolutely. So say an athlete does very poor on the first, so say this is a 20-week ACL postoperative, and he does the three-speed isokinetic testing, so he's tested at 60 degrees per second, 180, and 300 degrees per second. If he does very poorly on that first 60 degrees per second, that's an important test for us for pure power. And so if that was the case, he did very poorly on that first one, I'm saying, all right, we need to change your exercise prescription. We need to increase the load a lot and decrease the sets and reps. So we need to be working on that power training and that explosive training. Say the athlete does okay throughout some of the tests, but he fatigues out, then I'm going to change to more endurance testing, switch up the intensity of him's one rep max, and from there kind of delineate, this is what I want to do with your exercise program based off of what I'm seeing on this Biodex test. And I did this the other day with an athlete who came in to be tested. I hadn't seen the athlete before. I was very unfamiliar with his previous history of his path with rehab. I hadn't seen him working at all, so I wasn't sure what he's working on. But looking at his data, I was like, are you hitting the weights anymore? He said, no, I've stopped going to therapy. I was like, and I can tell. Like, I was like, you're not lifting weights anymore because your quad right now isn't doing much. He's like, yeah, I just got cleared for running, so I've been doing that. I was like, okay, well, it's kind of one example of what I'm seeing in the clinic, but it's kind of nice to say, all right, you did very poorly on the 60 degrees per second test. I want 4 sets of 8, working at 8 out of 10 of your 1 repetition max, or how hard you're working, of just trying to figure out working on a Bulgarian split squat, for example, to feed into that quad and try and give them that power back.
And, you know, going into some of this, if kind of along the lines of the baseline data, if I were to take, you know, the Biodex, say some basic goniometric measurements, FMS testing, and some VO2 max testing, as far as that as a, as, you know, baseline data, part of your PPE, have you seen any data, you know, along those lines? Have you seen any articles? And what are your thoughts about combining all of those to get a picture of the patient?
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting picture. I haven't seen much correlation between VO2 max and, for example, the Biodex testing. But I think what we're seeing with pre-participation examinations is the need for the functional movement testing, like the FMS that you referenced earlier. I think I would take that and use my time there more so than grabbing the VO2 max and grabbing the Biodex testing and maybe that kind of cluster, because kind of like what we're seeing with patients, if we wanted to include like such as an EKG, which was a hot topic, if you include an EKG in preparation examinations, you're going to miss most of the people that are going to potentially have heart problems with exercise. Same thing with Biodex testing. I don't think it captures enough for the athlete as a screening tool. And just remember, like pre-participation examinations are really to make sure you're safe with that. As a screening tool for injury, as we talked about a little bit earlier, it's potentially there. But as far as saying, hey, are you allowed to participate in sports because of this? It's not a test for that. VO2 max, same way. Those are more performance tests and not something that I would include in a PPE based on the definition of what the examination is looking to do.
Sure. Okay.
All right. So you listed some things that could be used instead of the Biodex.
Yeah.
Like the Y-balance test. You said the box step down.
Yeah, so like there's a single leg step down test, which is more for function. It doesn't actually measure pure strength. But other options for schools, I mean, a Biodex potentially list price is like $48,000.
Right.
It's a very expensive piece of equipment, especially for depending on the setting that you're going in. So there is, we know that manual muscle testing just doesn't do enough for a patient that's able to generate high force. Like if you have a linebacker who's healthy and you do a manual muscle test, it's not going to tell you very much. Like you're going to grade it at a 5. That's normal. But this allows us to look for more sensitive differences. What we're able to do as far as more diverse and less costly is they do handheld dynamometers, so called potentially MicroFET handheld dynamometer, mm-hmm. out of the Hogan Health Industries. It costs around $1,100. It's a small portable thing you can place in your hand. And from there, you can standardize it enough to say, all right, we're going to grab more isometric-based strength. So we've used it on endurance athletes testing hip abduction strength, but you could use it also for knee extensor strength. Say they're sitting on a table, you strap the MicroFET into a mobilization strap, if you had one, you'd set them at 90 degrees and have them kick out as hard as you can. So that's one way to kind of gather some strength data without going out and spending all that money on a Biodex. So that's a little bit more of a feasible option is the handheld dynamometer. I like going that route. It's easy to use for the shoulder as well, positioning them in prone and having them do external rotation, internal rotation at 90 degrees. That's a more likely quick screen that'll do on an athlete that takes less time, and it can give me at least isometric strength in a particular part of their range. Not to use for isokinetic as much, but as far as isometric strength goes, I think it's a great option. And it's coming up more and more in the research as the Biodex test is, as we said, they're not putting as much weight into it. So we're looking for more easier options to utilize.
All right, so can you give me a few tips on using this? Because we have the hydraulic one because it was, you know, like $400 versus $1,100.
Yeah.
Right? And so I got it with a grant. So again, we've only played with it some. We've only had it for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Can you give me some tips? Because it seems very subjective on whether or not I was able to hold it perfectly still.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So, and yeah, the best way is that you have to find an objective way to measure on each person. So setting the joint angles. So setting, say it was like a shoulder, strapping them down to the table more or less to make sure that there's no compensatory movements. That's what the Biodex can do pretty well, is kind of prevent excessive motion because they strap down the body pretty tight. If with the hydraulics and unfortunately the handheld dynamometer, you can't control as many factors. So there isn't as many set protocols for the handheld dynamometers at this time compared to the Biodex, but it is out there. So for hip abduction, you would kind of set them up in side lying. You'd bring their hip up to 30 degrees of abduction and slight extension. And then from there, you'd place the microfet over the lateral femoral condyle, just proximal to that. And then from there, you'd strap the belt down and keep them at that range and make sure that there's no tilting of the pelvis. But when you tell an athlete to push as hard as they can into something, they're typically going to cheat out of it. So trying to control it is tough, but there is ways to grab, as long as you're staying consistent on it, there is ways to utilize it. So we'd have to kind of go over the hydraulics and figure out what would be the best way to kind of standardize it for you. Say, even if, at least for one patient, it might be different than the way you test another patient, but as long as you can reproduce that test, it should be meaningful to you.
So you're saying with the digital one, the microfet, you could use like a belt to strap it to the leg, mm-hmm. and to the table,
mm-hmm.
and then
yeah.
basically you're stabilizing the rest of the joints
yeah,
somehow. Absolutely.
Yeah, like with your okay. body, more or less.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I would have to build some sort of rig or something yeah. for that to work with the hydraulic one, but at least it gives me an idea because, yeah. you know, I was holding it and Bill was pushing and then I slip and, you know, tear up his skin. Or
yeah,
something.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the unfortunate thing about the handheld dynamometer is that you have to have a payoff, that standardization and preventing that compensatory movement and trying to more or less keep that manual muscle test position the best you can or the hydraulic position the best you can. So it's definitely not an ideal situation, but for at least what we're able to see in some of the research that we've done is that we're pretty pleased with using our handheld dynamometer at getting some at least baseline data for strength.
So the one time that I have used the handheld dynamometer, it was just for hip strength, so mm-hmm. I did internal rotation, external rotation, flexion, extension. But for each strength test that I was doing in that motion, I would do three different ones, and then I would average that.
Yeah.
But to me, it seemed like it took forever. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I think it was like 15 minutes later, and I'd just done the hip. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, and to make sure that your results are reliable, you have to do it more than once.
Yeah, again,
and
an
so
average.
That does, yeah, and it does take time. If you're not within, I think 5 or 6 pounds, like you have to retest that. There's nowhere near. So say you have an athlete on the table and you test them on their one side, they get a 50, you test them their hip on the other side, they get a 50, test them again on their right side, say, and it's down to like 40. You're like, oh man, I'm going to have to do that again. Cause mm-hmm. that's just too much variability. That's too much exceeds the range that would be acceptable. So there is definitely some degree of error to that aspect that you have to account for. So it does take some time, but as I said, I like that it's adaptable and you can use it for more body parts and a little bit more easy to use than the stationary Biodex.
And tell me, Kevin, in your opinion, you know, the Biodex at some point was really popular, then it kind of dropped off, and then it's making a comeback, and now you're seeing, you know, all these different options in terms of testing. In your opinion, why is it gaining such a, you know, resurgence?
I think because it's some of the best objective data we have, because you can look at an athlete functionally and sometimes somebody else is going to look at them a little differently. So if me and Nicole were to grade an athlete jumping from a less test and then coming back up, it's not as potentially reliable as potentially setting up the Biodex. So for me, when you're trying to set standardized protocols, particularly in research, it's one of the best ways to do that. Everybody's able, and since it's been around for so long, everybody can kind of speak the same language. When I say I'm running a 3-speed test, that typically means the same thing to each person that participates in running a Biodex test. Sometimes the same can't be said for a step down test, where there are potentially different grading criteria. Also, as I said, the user error, when you're looking at the inter-rater reliability for something like the step down test versus the less jumping, there is a little bit more variety in those results.
Do you know exactly how they came to determine the degrees per second, like the 60, the 180, oh, how that?
That's a really good question. Maybe Dr. Yellen can speak to that. He's been around for a little bit longer than I have, but I can't quite I can't quite say when, why they decided the 60 versus 180, but that's something I could look into in some of the original research.
My guess would be the same way they found occupational data, in that this is how much a femur can take, this is how much a humerus can take, is that just over time you have a number of different patient populations and you're just taking data and finding averages and figuring out what's going to work best. You know, I think that's probably how they got to that point. Just guessing.
Very well could be. I'll have to look into it and get back to you guys.
Yeah, good.
All right. Any other thoughts for the high school athletic trainer that, again, we can't replace the Biodex, but can do a similar job of assessing?
That's very tough because, as I said, it's just when you're doing manual muscle testing, which is kind of like the bread and butter of strength testing that we were all taught in athletic training, it's just not going to give you what you need to know for a higher force generating athlete. And so I think athletic trainers, we do the best that we can with what we have. And I think some of that is also respecting that sometimes you need more, so a step up. So we have had consultations and prescriptions from doctors strictly just for Biodex testing at our clinic. So that is an option, just having the patient come in strictly for that and saying, all right, you have this data, now go back to your athletic trainer and get back to work. So I wish I could have the answer for kind of the athletic trainer that's kind of has a budget that doesn't allow for a nice fancy machine like that. But knowing that there are resources out there and to reach out to area PT saying, hey, what is your guys' policy on running Biodex tests for high school athletes and that kind of thing. And I think you'd be pleasantly surprised that people who are willing to reach out, particularly if it's ordered by a doctor, to say, all right, this is what we can do for you. Because if you're not going to perform a full evaluation, maybe there's potentially something we can do just to do the Biodex test. So that'd be a potential option that I would look into.
Cool. So just ask, hey, you know, we've done this. Can you possibly run the Biodex because we don't have it?
Yeah. And as I said, I've had patients come in with prescriptions simply for Biodex testing. So I screen to make sure they're appropriate for it. And then I stick them on there. We talk about the data. I send it to the doctor. And then I sometimes never see the patient again. And so based off of that, it is something that you can reach out for and strictly look to test.
All right. Very good. Nicole, final thoughts, questions?
Just thank you for talking about it.
Of course.
Yellen?
I got nothing. Kevin's coming in as one of my adjuncts. So, I mean, I got this guy all day, every day. I'm lucky.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and then on that note, Kevin, someone wants to find out more or get a hold of you. How are they going to do that?
Awesome. So you can feel free to reach me at my email, and I can post that for you guys. But it's kevin.maloney@memorialherman.org, and that would be the best way to get a hold of me.
All right, what about any sort of social media, Facebook, Twitter?
None.
Snapchat?
I need to get big on that. I need to, I guess, further my exposure in that route. I'll look into it.
Wait a minute. Telling me that if I hit Twitter or Facebook?
I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. I'll give you that. I'm on LinkedIn. Kevin Maloney, you can look me up. Memorial Herman. I got a good old Florida Gator picture as my background. So.
We have, you know, the MAT program's got a Facebook page, and you need to be on Facebook to
I need to get on Facebook to like it, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to have to do something about that.
All right, well, kevin.maloney@memorialherman.org if you want to email him, find out some more, continue the conversation. Maybe there you go. That's a good way. Of course, you got Dr. Yellen there and Nicole Kasha joining us from the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training. Sportshealth.com/SMB, the keyword for March, which is almost over, is Bubba. And then for April is Frio. So check out Frio Hydration to get your water needs for outside, especially coming up in August. It's going to be hot. So, and then, Kevin, you're going to get any plans to be speaking at the Memorial Herman Update?
As of right now, I don't think so, but I'll see kind of what comes up and comes my way. We'll see.
All right. It's a real cool event. Have you been to it?
Not yet.
It's definitely well worth it. Josh and Mark have helped me the last 2 years with doing the interviews and broadcast from there. It's an awesome event. I really enjoy all of that there. So,
perfect.
All right. I'm Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. This one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/Biodex. Again, that's Kevin Maloney talking about Biodex protocols. And that is a wrap.